Here, it's called Einei Yisrael, and Rav Elia Weintraub has a couple of ma'amarim on Lag BaOmer, so we'll learn just a little piece, one of the pieces. Okay, we'll start on page Reish Ayin Gimel, where it says Kedushas Chag HaShvuas Nosein Rishumo Al Yom Lag BaOmer. Everyone see that on page Reish Ayin Gimel, Os Zayin, middle of the page. Yeah. Okay. All right, so let's see. Let's try to understand what Lag BaOmer is, and where it draws its energy from, and why it's so important. Okay, so let's see. The beginning of the piece, he's exploring why is it that we have what seems to be a contradiction of how we approach the death of tzaddikim. Right? Meaning Moshe Rabbeinu's yahrzeit, Zayin Adar, in the Shulchan Aruch says it's a fast day. And yet somehow Rabbi Shimon's yahrzeit became a hilula, a huge celebration. The word hilula, like in the Gemara, means like a wedding celebration. That was a big simcha. So he discusses whether the Yom Misa Sadikim is a time of simcha or a time of tzar, and tries to work on that sugya. Happens to be that Lag BaOmer is also really a celebration of Rabbi Akiva, who is the Rebbe of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. But we can't celebrate Rabbi Akiva's death because Rabbi Akiva died such a tragic death. Rabbi Akiva, one of the Asar Haruge Malchus, Rabbi Akiva died a martyr's death, was tortured by the Romans. Maybe he didn't feel his own pain, but we can't celebrate that day. So we celebrate Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's loss is also seemingly a big loss. And yet on his deathbed he's revealing secrets of Torah. So we need to understand in general how that works. That's the first part of the piece, which we're not going to go into. But the end of the piece, which is the part that you have in front of you, he gives us something I think that's very fundamental to understanding Lag BaOmer. Okay, so let's see. So he says, again, the title of this chapter of Os Zayin is that the Kedusha of Chag HaShvuas Nosein Rishumo Al Yom Lag BaOmer. That somehow Shvuas has a Hashpa on Lag BaOmer. Which will say, how does that work? Shvuas comes 17 days after Lag BaOmer. So how could Shavuos have a hashpa on Lag BaOmer? Let's see. It'll help us to understand this whole period of time. Nichlas ata levaris etzem hayom Lag BaOmer. So now, let's begin to understand what is it that's so significant about Lag BaOmer. Hinei yuduim divrei haRamban. So before we highlight any particular day, we have to look at the Ramban's presentation of this whole period of Sfiras Omer. We have Pesach, 49 days of Sfira, Shavuos. So how do we look at that? So the Ramban writes in this week's Parsha, those of us in Chutz La'aretz, Parsha's Emor, Sheyamei Sviras HaOmer Heim Kamo Chol HaMoed Shebein Pesach La'atzeres. An amazing idea. On Sukkot, we have the beginning of Yom Tov, we have Chol HaMoed, we have the end of Yom Tov. On Pesach, we have Yom Tov, Chol HaMoed, Yom Tov. Shavuos is a little bit different in the sense that Shavuos is only a day or two if you're Chutz La'aretz, right? But the Ramban reveals a secret to us that really, on a certain level, Pesach and Shavuos are bookends, and all of Sfiras HaOmer has a certain Chol HaMoed quality to it in the middle. Now, it doesn't have the rules of Chol HaMoed. There's no Isser Malacha. Right? Why is the Ramban calling it Chol HaMoed? Why is he linking Pesach and Shavuos? They're calling this whole period in the middle, treating it almost like this one long Chol HaMoed. Very interesting idea. V'hu kedugmas hayovel b'galgal hazman. And it's almost like, again, the same way that we have a Shemitah cycle, and we have a Yovel cycle. All right, so to these 50 days, from Pesach to Shavuos, with Lag BaOmer in the middle, is sort of part of this bigger cycle that's taking place within time. What is Yovel? After seven cycles of seven Shemitah cycles, we have a Yovel year. What's a Yovel year? A Yovel year, it says in the Liberty Bell, right? Across the drawer, that we should proclaim liberty and freedom throughout the land. So Yovel is sort of this reset, where anyone who sold their ancestral land, it comes back to you. Yovel has a lot to do with Mashiach. Yovel has to do with sort of this, again, this tremendous chayrus that takes place in the world, which again makes it somewhat Mashiachdik, freedom from galus, freedom from a less ideal state of existence. And the 49 years of Shemitah, well, on the one hand, they have their own purpose, but on a grand scale, they're only just setting the way, paving the way to get to the ultimate goal, which is very much what Sfiras HaOmer is in relationship to Shavuos. Right? We want to just get to Shavuos. We want to arrive at Shavuos. We mentioned that's why we don't say, one of the explanations why we don't say a Shachianu on Sfiras HaOmer. Because we're not ready to celebrate at the beginning of the Omer. We're so excited that what's going to come at the end, which is Kabbalah Satorah. So again, in his words, in the third line, Shechol memtes hashanim heim emtsa'im la'agil le'yovel, shu tachlis kula. The 49 years of the cycle that leads up to that Yovel year, right, are all just emtsa'im. They're just conduits, they're just channels by which they're midway points, right? They're dots along the road to help us to reach that overarching goal, the tachlis of it all, which is Yovel. So too, when we look at Sfiras HaOmer, Kein kol memtes yemei haOmer, heim emtsa'im lagi lachag haShavuos shu tachlis kula. So the 49 days of the Omer are just a roadmap to help us to reach the ultimate tachlis, not only in terms of, you know, the celebration of Shavuos, but it's really the ultimate tachlis of creation, which is to get the Torah. Okay. Umi hai taima, and it's for that reason, Isa betor, de gimel tfilos haShabbos heim kereged gimel Shabbosos. We find a very interesting idea in the Torah, in his writings, the Arba Turim, that the three tefillos of Shabbos correspond to three different types of Shabbos. What do you mean, three different types of Shabbos? Shabbos Bereishis, there was the Shabbos of creation, right? Which is, of course, we celebrate on a weekly basis, or we commemorate on a weekly basis. Shabbos that celebrates sort of the week, same way Hashem rested on Shabbos. Then there was another very significant Shabbos in history, what we call Shabbos de Matan Torah. The Gemara says it's a debate when exactly the Torah was given. Was it the 6th of Sivan? Was it the 7th of Sivan? But everyone agrees that what? That the Torah was given on Shabbos. And that Shabbos is a day of Torah. Yom HaDinishmasa. That's what Shabbos is. And then there's Shabbos in the form of what? Yom Shekulo Shabbos Lasadlava. Mashiach itself. We're looking forward to a time period when it's going to be always Shabbos, whatever that means exactly. So what do you see? Hare Shabbos hu tachlis maisa shemayim v'aretz. If Shabbos is sort of, again, the goal of creation of heaven and earth, u'mochach dekamo kein Shabbos tematan Torah hu tachlis hamem tes yamim shelefanov. In other words, Rav Elie Weintraub saying that the same way that Shabbos, when Hashem was creating the world, that was the goal, right? Sof ma'aseh b'machshav etchila, the goal of creation, of the 7 days of creation, is to get to Shabbos. And if we zoom out a little further, the goal of all of existence is to get to Yom Shekula Shabbos, which is Mashiach. So that means the third Shabbos, the Shabbos of Matan Torah, also has to be seen as what? As the tachlis. Now you can say it again generically that yes, getting the Torah is the tachlis of creation. Why did Hashem make the world to be able to give us the Torah? But the same way that the 7 days of the week lead up, 6 days of the week lead up to Shabbos, and the 49 years lead up to Yovel, so the 49 days of Sfiras HaOmer lead up to the goal, the tachlis, which is what? Which is Kabbalah Satorah, which is Shavuos. Okay. But why did the Ramban have to give us this mashal of Chol HaMoed? Why do they have to compare it to Chol HaMoed? You want to create a picture for us that the goal is to get to Shavuos. Why are you comparing the days of Sfiras HaOmer to Chol HaMoed? They're not Chol HaMoed. They're not halachically Chol HaMoed. So why did the Ramban think to make this comparison? That I can look at the same way that I have the first day of Pesach and the last day of Pesach with Chol HaMoed in the middle. So do I have Pesach and Shavuos with Sfiras HaOmer in the middle. Well, what's that comparison about? So says the Heiliger of Elia Weintraub. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Chagiga, the kedushas Chol HaMoed novea mima sheyesh kedusha lefaneh kedusha l'achra. The kedusha of Chol HaMoed, where does it come from? Why is it? It's an interesting question. Why should let's say Pesach starts on a, you know, whatever day, I don't know, right, the way it fell out this year. Right, so why should it be, right, that the Monday after Pesach, why is that day Chol HaMoed, Tuesday, why is that called Chol HaMoed? What makes it Chol HaMoed? It's not Yom Tov. Right, it's Chol HaMoed because what? Because there's a mitzvah that is different, because we're eating matzah as opposed to chametz, so that's what makes this day, this regular Tuesday, not so regular anymore. Because we're sitting in a sukkah, that's what makes this regular Tuesday not so regular anymore. So the Gemara tells us that on a certain level, Chol HaMoed draws its Kedusha because it's surrounded. When you're surrounded by Kedusha, it has a hashpa on you. I'll give you just the first example that popped in my head just now. Maybe it's an imperfect example. But if you've learned at the beginning of Maseches Megillah, right? When is the Megillah read? Megillah nekres b'yad aleph, b'yad beis, b'yad gimel, b'yad dalet, b'tesvav, lo pachos v'lo yoser. What are the primary days for Kriyas HaMegillah? Yedalet and Tesvav. Right? Yedalet and Tesvav. And the Gemara Daf Beis in Maseches Megillah has a drasha. It says, Bizmanehem. So Zmanim Tuva comes to teach us their additional days. So what should the additional days be? Should it be the 16th and 17th of Adar? No, the Megillah says V'lo Yavor. It can't be after the 14th and 15th. Okay, we'll go before the 14th and 15th. Right? So let's make it the... Let's make it the 13th. Let's make it the 11th. Let's make it the 12th. The Gemara concludes, okay, well, we have 2 days, 2 primary days, 14 and 15, so we'll add 2 more days, the 11th and 12th. What about the 13th? So if you look at the Talmud Bavli and in the Talmud Yerushalmi, you get a different impression of exactly what the story with the 13th is. However, what was the story with the 13th? What was supposed to happen on the 13th of Adar? What was supposed to happen on the 13th of Adar? Haman was supposed to annihilate us. So the Gemara in Maseches Megillah refers to the 13th as Yud Gimel Zman Kihila L'choli. Yud Gimel is Zman Kihila. It's a time of gathering. V'lo tzarech l'ribuye. You don't need to include it. So typically you read the Gemara and you think that means that, oh, great. Of course you can read the Megillah on the 13th. Right, that was the day we were supposed to die. That was when the Jews gathered together. Zman Kihila, they got together and they fasted and they fought for their lives. Right? So the Megillah tells us they rested on the 14th and 15th, that's for sure. The 13th, it's obvious, of course, you can read the Megillah on that day, so we still got to find 2 more days. Okay, so the 11th and 12th. So 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. But one way to learn that Gemara, and it becomes clear if you learn the Rosh and the Yerushalmi, it becomes clear that, hold on, maybe the Gemara was saying something else. Maybe Yud Gimel Zman Kihil L'cholhi, maybe the Gemara is saying, Yud Gimel is definitely not a day to read the Megillah. You know why? Because when did we establish Kriyas HaMegillah? What does it say in the Megillah? On the day that the Jews rested. Not on the day the Jews fought. So in fact, Yud Gimel, because it was the day that we fought, is the least appropriate day to read the Megillah. So then you're left scratching your head. So why in the end do we read it on Yud Aleph, Yud Beis, Yud Gimel, Yud Dalet, Tesvav? To which it emerges from Chazal, the Rishonim, that how could it be that you're able to read the Megillah on Yud Aleph and Yud Beis, and you're able to read the Megillah on Yud Dalet and Tesvav, but that day that's sandwiched in the middle, you're not going to be able to read the Megillah? In other words, what I'm trying to highlight is that if something gets surrounded on both sides by Kedusha, it has a hashpa on the thing that's in the middle. That's true for people also. You put yourself in a Seviva, you put yourself in an environment, right, where there's Kedusha in front of you and Kedusha behind you, so you become swept up by that. So in a certain sense, that's what Chol HaMoed is about. How does Chol HaMoed get Kedusha? What makes Chol HaMoed holy? Right. Oh, Chol HaMoed gets Kedusha from the fact that what? That it's surrounded by Yom Tov. There's Yom Tov at the beginning, and there's Yom Tov at the end. Kedusha lefanel, Kedusha l'achara. Maybe, by the way, that's the secret of Mashiach. Because what does the Gemara say in Maseches Shabbos? If the Jewish people would keep 2 Shabbosos, then Mashiach would come. Why? Because if we have a Shabbos at the beginning, right? And then we have a Shabbos a week later at the end, and we get both those Shabbosos right, then what happens? What happens to the middle? The week is great, and it becomes Yom Shekulo Shabbos. And Shabbos has a hashpa. Even now, meaning the fact that every week we have Shabbos, right? Hayom Yom Rishon B'Shabbos, Hayom Sheni B'Shabbos. But if we can get 2 superstar, you know, Grand Slam Shabbosos, perfect Shabbosos, so to speak, then we'll transform all of time into Yom Shekulah Shabbos. Okay, so let's read inside. So So says Rabbi Elie Weintraub, according to Gemara Chagiga, so Chol HaMoed gets its Kedusha from the fact that there's a Kedusha before it and the Kedusha after it. Klomar. Beis HaYamim Shelefaneh V'Achareh Mashpiyim Mikedushasam Ale Yamim Shebein Tayim. That those 2 days of Kedusha, before and after, have a Hashpa of Kedusha on the days that are in the middle. HaKedusha Lefaneh Hu Be'ofen Pashut. So now, here's where things get a little interesting. The Kedusha that I get coming out of a Yom Tov, so I just had Yom Tov, right? So when I wake up the next morning, it makes sense that what? And I'm still feeling what? I'm still drawing from that uplifting experience. The question is, so how do I draw into Chol HaMoed from the end of Yom Tov, which hasn't even happened yet? Right? That's what we're saying. We're saying the Kedusha's Chol HaMoed in the middle is drawing from the Kedusha on the ends. But I haven't even got to that yet. And what he's doing is he's setting up this question of, so how does Sfiras HaOmer draw from Shavuos that hasn't even happened yet? If the Ramban is calling Sfiras HaOmer Chol HaMoed, and Chol HaMoed gets its Kedusha from that which is before it and that which is after, how do you draw Kedusha from something in the future? In other words, let's say like this. Right? Every one of us is molded by our parents, we're molded by our grandparents, we're molded by our great-grandparents, whether we have a close relationship with them or not a close relationship with them, whether we knew them, whether we didn't know them, we're all drawing from them. Take it further back. Avos and Imos. Every one of us is still living under the protection of Magen Avraham. We say it in Shemona Esrei 3 times a day. Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov. We call it Tzchus Avos. So we understand that right now we might be the beneficiaries of a decision that our great-grandmother made generations ago. But how am I able to draw strength right now, spiritual strength right now, from my future descendants, from my great-grandchildren? What does that mean? They don't even exist yet. How can I tap into them and have them somehow have a hashpa on me? You hear why that sounds like a crazy idea? How could that be? And yet we find such an idea. We have a notion that Avram Avinu was saved by the Kivshon HaEish. Ever hear this idea? In the discourse of Yaakov. In the merit of Yaakov. Yaakov doesn't exist yet. What does it mean Avram is being protected by the Kivshon HaEish in the merit of Yaakov? Is it that Hashem has a vision that one day there'll be a Yaakov? So that means Avram has to live? It's a very deep idea. Let's just finish this paragraph and then I'll let you guys respond to it. HaKadusha Lefanehu Ve'ofen Pashut. Again, how I draw from those who came before me. How the first day of Yom Tov has a hashpa and Chol HaMoed that comes after it, I get. The same way that I understand how I'm molded by my parents and grandparents. Du klal shekedusha shechala mashira roshem gam la'achar mikin. Because we have a rule that when kedusha is chal, when kedusha takes effect, it leaves a roshem, it leaves a mark afterwards. There's a hashpa, there's an impression that was made. Va kedusha she'acharea who mishum shehu hatachlis shel hayamim k'masha kasuf. But the kedusha that I draw from that which comes afterwards is because of an appreciation that the thing that comes afterwards is the tachlis. In other words, right now, I can get a certain holiness out of Sfiras HaOmer because I'm focused on the tachlis, which is that in a couple of weeks from now, we're going to be celebrating Shavuos. Val kein yesh bo mahalach. So we have this mahalach, this approach of sof ma'aseh b'machshava t'chila, that what's going to happen later on already is in my mind because I'm focused. I understand what I'm doing during Sfiras HaOmer. I understand what I'm preparing myself for. The kvar b'tchila munach rishumim shel kedusha asida. So already now, I'm getting a roshim. I'm getting a taste. I'm drawing from the hashpa, the impression of the kedusha that's yet to come. Da kedusha shebesov yesh la kvar taguva lifnei chen biyos shayamim shelifnei chen heim emtzayim lagia elav. Amazing idea that already what's going to happen in the future, since I am on the path that's going to lead to that, so the path is also receiving from the hashpa of what's to come. In other words, your descendants, right, your great great grandchildren, Amir Tzashem, are able to what? Are able to have a hashpa on you right now, which is a crazy idea. That's a crazy idea. A holy life of, you may have a great-grandchild one day who, you know, lives an amazing life. And their choices in Avodas Hashem, in Kedusha, The way that they choose to live has a hashpa on us right now. It's a very, very deep idea. Yeah, Dovi.
Like I was saying, that came before us leave like some sort of influence. Like,
sure.
Let's say your parents gave you a bit of a springboard, and then the prospect of having a grandchild who's, let's say, who grows up to be a god of, then makes you to make decisions that will facilitate that.
Correct. The more rational way to say it is like that, meaning knowing that one day I'm going to get to Shuas, right? So I have to prepare myself during Sfiras Omer. So that's how Shuas is influencing Sfiras Omer. Knowing that one day I want my grandchildren to be from, so that influences the Torah lifestyle that I choose to live right now.
Yeah.
Right? So that's the, for sure, the sailing. Yeah.
Share a story with the iron. I was in China, I decided to learn Chagiga, and after, it was like my first ever, and after finishing the first parak, I was like very excited. So I went up to Rav Yair, I was like, look what I did, like I just shot my notes and everything. And he like wasn't like matching my idea at all. He was like, did you write a letter to your great-grandparents? And I was like, he's like, so then none of this matters. And then I went back and wrote a letter and sent it tomorrow.
Wow.
But I guess it's the same idea.
Wow. Okay. Right. This is why I'm showing you that the choices you're making now change future generations, and right, and you're drawing from them, and you're paving the way for them. It's a very deep idea. Amazing. It's amazing. Okay, so Chara, two lines from the bottom. So let's see. So let's understand this more. Val kein kedushas chagashuas poel bechazara al yemei siras homer. Right. So sometimes there's a hashpa where it's again. It's flowing in a linear fashion. It makes sense within time. Sometimes there's this reverberation, this bouncing back. The Shavuos is poel b'chazara. The Shavuos that is going to happen is already having a hashpa on us now. I want to learn well now because I want to come to Shavuos and receive the Torah. And therefore, the kulam yamei cholamoid. Ve'emtza'im la'gi elab shu'tachas kulam. So now we better understand the Ramban's imagery of Sfiras HaOmer being the Chol HaMoed between Pesach and Shavuos. However, now he says on the bottom line, Uve'ikar nosein rishumim al yom lag b'omer. But the day that got hit the most with the energy that bounces off of Shavuos, it bounces back towards us, is lag b'omer. V'chein mevur v'ramah, turn the page, ramah mipano. Ramam Mipano, the great Italian Makubal, the Ramam Mipano, and we alluded to some of these ideas. Those were at Shiur on Thursday when he spoke about the Yiridas HaMan, how the Man began to fall in Lag BaOmer, and how the 49 days of Sfira are divided into 32 days and 17 days. D'tov Yamim Lefnei Chag HaShavuos, Tov Gematria 17, the 17 days that lead us up to Shavuos, Misnoitzes Misgula Sayom. That for some reason, on this day, 17 days out from Shavuos, Shavuos has a bigger hashva. V'zeh miyuchad b'yom Lag BaOmer. And that's unique about Lag BaOmer. Avnam tzarech b'yom b'pnei ma'chal b'davka al yom Lag BaOmer. But the Ramam Mipano doesn't tell us why. We know it's true, because we see how Klal Yisrael celebrates Lag BaOmer. And you might think, that's a totally independent thing. That has nothing to do with Shavuos, but the tzaddikim are revealing to us that, no. This is the Hashpa bouncing back from Shavuos. Now we spoke on Thursday, Hasir is divided into 32 days and 17 days. The first 32 days is sort of the hachana for the nigla of Torah, the revealed aspects of Torah. The last stretch, the final 17 days, are preparing our neshamos to receive even deeper dimensions of Torah. There's something called nistar in Torah. That there's a pnimius of Torah. Right? There's a soul of the Torah, not just the guf of the Torah. Right? But exactly how that works and why Shavuos is having this hashpa on Lag BaOmer, we need to understand. Okay? So now he gives us really very, very fundamental yesodos in Lag BaOmer. Okay? Says Rav Elia Weintraub, Hod Shebahod. Hod Shebahod mikoach ha'amuna she yesod matan Torah. Says Rav Elia Weintraub, we have to understand how Lag BaOmer is Hod Shebahod. We'll explain what that means. Mikoach ha'amuna, and it comes from amuna, which is the foundation of Matan Torah. Let's try to understand. V'hinei. Ha-hechsher ha-ikari le-matan Torah. Pirshu lanu anche knesses hagadola lehedya v'birchas avar abba. The anche knesses hagadola, when they gave us a tefillah, almost the extended birchas haTorah called avar abba that we recite before we get to Shema every morning. So the anche knesses hagadola, in formulating this tefillah, they gave us an explanation of what we need in order to come to Kabbalah Sator. Right? And we ask for a lot of things. We say a lot of things. Right? First of all, Hashem, you've given us such love. Right? Being a Jew is not a punishment. It's the greatest expression of Hashem choosing you and loving. You have such mercy, such pity on us. So concerned for us, Hashem. Avinu Malkeinu. Ba'avur avoseinu shebatchu v'cha. Because of our ancestors who were what? Who had bitachon in you. Because of our ancestors who believed in you. V'telamdeim chukei chayim. And therefore, Hashem, you showed them how to live their lives. Avram Avinu said, I'm searching for God. So Hashem called out to him, lech lecha me'artzecha, as we've said in the past, in the Sfas Emes. Lech lecha me'artzecha was said to anyone who was tuned in and wanted to listen, like Sfas Emes says. Avram Avinu wanted to hear Hashem. So because he believed in Hashem, and because he was seeking Hashem, Hashem taught him. Kein techanenu salamdenu. So to Hashem, teach me Torah. Avinu avarachman amarachim rachim aleinu b'seim b'libeinu lahavin ulahaskil lishmoa lilmur lamed lishmor v'lasos alakayim is called divrei salvator asecha bi'ava. V'chayar einenu b'sar asecha. Right, we're davening for Torah, 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 Torah. But the introduction is what? How did Torah start? You taught those who came before us. Why did you teach them? Why did Hashem begin teaching Torah before the official Kabbalah, the Torah, Matan Torah? Ba'avur avoseinu shebatchu v'cha. Because of our ancestors who had bitachon in you. Interesting. Bitachon is sort of the starting point of Kabbalah Sator. Let's see inside. Says Rav Elia Weintraub, umefurash da'habes kibul l'Torah. The base kibul means the receptacle, the vessel. Making a kli that is going to be able to receive Torah, hu al yidei midas habitachon. It starts with bitachon. Sharei ilu hayo davar acher. Because if it was something else that got the process of Torah revealing itself to the world in the form of the avos learning Torah, if they did something else, then it should have said something else. If it was something else, hayu omrim ba'avur avoseinu, shahayel hem mida plonis. It should have said ba'avur avoseinu, because of our ancestors who, dot, 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 fill in the blank. But the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah, with their great wisdom, they wrote, ba'avur avoseinu, the Torah process began because our ancestors were batchu v'cha, because our ancestors were batchu v'cha, because they believed in you. Because they had bitachon in you. So apparently bitachon is the foundation, is the starting point of Kabbalah Sator. V'chein isa lehedya b'medrash, and this will resonate strongly with us for those who were there on Thursday, lo nidna Torah ela la'ochle haman. The Torah was only given to Jews who ate the man. So what would your gut reaction be? Right, because the man was such a holy food. The man was such a holy food, so it refined their bodies. Again, as we learned on Thursday, the man was a Meichel Ruchani to such a degree that people literally were undergoing a transformation from one day to the next when they ate the man, like the Rebbe of Rimanov taught us on Thursday. Right? The man was like this, you know, cleansing diet, spiritual cleansing diet to make us ready for Kabbalah Sator. True. But what was it like to be a person who ate the man? What's it like not having a bank account? What's it like not having any food in the fridge or the freezer or in the pantry? What's it like literally living in the middle of the desert and expecting to be sustained from one day to the next? And to wake up every morning and hope that that care package of food is going to arrive. Eating the man was a tremendous, tremendous training course in what? In emunah and bitachon. In relying on HaKadosh Baruch Hu to provide for you day in and day out. The inyan haman haya leman hodiacha ki lo al lechem levado. The point of the man was to train a person that lo al lechem levado yichya ha'adam. A person doesn't live by bread alone. A person lives by their emunah and bitachon. We're sustained by our faith. That was the test of the man. The man was a scary, the man was a very intense nisayon. Everyone imagines, the man was gavaldik, it was so fun, the man. You could taste like whatever you wanted. The man seems like a good time. The man was a very holy food, and the man was a big challenge. That's why we find the Jewish people complaining about the man. Right? That they had all sorts of nisyonos with the man. But the lesson of the man is lo al alechem levado yichya adam. Right? A person doesn't live by bread alone. Pasuk says in Parshas Ekev, "Ma'achilcha man b'midbar, I fed you man in the desert, asher lo yadun avosecha, like your ancestors didn't know, laman anoscha ulaman nasoscha, I fed it to you to afflict you, ulaman nasoscha, in order to challenge you." The man was a challenge. Lehitivcha ba'acharisecha. In order to better you. But it was a nisayon. It was a big nisayon, the man. Ve'yancha ve'yarivecha ve'yachilcha esaman asher lo yedata ve'lo yedu'un avasecha. Laman odiacha ki lo alechem levado yichya adam. To teach you that a person doesn't live by bread alone. All of your business ideas are not going to be the key to your... to your financial success. The person has to be careful, as the Pasuk says. Don't say, Kochi v'otzim yodi. It was my effort. The man was training us the recognition that everything I have comes from Hashem. My most basic sustenance comes from Hashem. Okay? And therefore, says the Medrash, only those Jews who ate the man were zochet to Torah. Ve'eneim ha'inesuos l'marum kol yom. Their eyes were lifted to the heavens every day. Hoping that Hashem, what? She has speak lahem tzarchayim. Hashem, please, send me what I need to survive. Right? Mechadash, each day was a new thing. And by acquiring that midah of bitachon, they were zocha to Torah. So now, what is bitachon? Very fundamental. Says Rav Elia Weintraub, midas habitachon, hi be'etzem koach ha'emuna. Bitachon is the manifestation of one's emunah. This is very fundamental. Rav Weintraub, we said, moved to Bnei Brak. Moved to Eretz Yisrael in the 1960s. A little bit of time in Yerushalayim, and then he was in Bnei Brak. Right? Very much Mekusher. Again, a neighbor of Chaim Kanievsky. Okay, Mekusher to the world of the Chazon Ish. He learned in the Kol of Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish passed away before the 1960s. Right? But he was Mekusher to the world of the Chazon Ish. Chazon Ish has a famous sefer called Sefer Emunah Bitachon. Right? Talks about other topics as well. The Chazon Ish says, what's the difference between Emunah and Bitachon? You have to know, it's so simple and fundamental. What is the difference between Emunah and Bitachon? Faith and trust. What does that mean? Emunah is the theory. Bitachon is the practice. Emunah is a feeling. Bitachon is living that feeling as a reality. Emunah is... do I believe that there is a God? Yes, I believe there's a God. Bitachon is great. So how do my choices reflect that belief? To what degree do I actually trust? Do I really believe to such a degree that I'm actually able to do something? Right? Am I prepared to make choices that reflect that? Emunah is the theory. I believe in God as an idea. Bitachon is, okay, I'll take the job that pays less money, but puts me in a better spiritual environment because I trust that I'm not going to lose out because of that. That's living one's emunah. That's called bitachon. So bitachon, he says, is be'etzem koach ha'emunah. Bitachon is a manifestation, it's the expression, it's what emerges from one's emunah. De'amunah hi b'muchshios kolkach, that my emunah becomes so substantive, it becomes so tangible and real, that I can actually lean on it. And I live according to it. I make choices that reflect that. I often say that when Jews say they have emunah issues, no Jew has an emunah issue. Emunah is not a choice. You might have a perceived emunah issue. Right? I say a perceived emunah issue because you might think that you have questions about whether or not God exists. In your heart of hearts, you know that God exists. Tell me that's chutzpahdik. Who are you to tell me what I feel? I'm telling you, that's the metzias of a Jew. That's the pintaliyah. Every Jew in his heart of hearts believes in Hashem. Push comes to shove, every single Jew in his heart of hearts knows and believes in Hashem. Right? Again, we sometimes struggle in emunah because we have other ideas that cover our emunah. So we call a person who is struggling with faith a kofar. Kofar means to cover up. He's covered up that emunah. But emunah is not really a choice. Emunah was stamped onto us at our Sinai. The choice is to what degree we live that emunah with bitachon. And that's a real struggle. None of us have a doubt that there's a God in this world. But I wonder sometimes, right, if every move I make is really under his watch and under his guidance. And bitachon is where it's hard. Bitachon is where I make the self-sacrifice, where I make real world choices, because like he says here, that I'm able to lean on it entirely. V'lo rak, not only in theory, mufshetes, not only in abstract theory, right, but in reality. V'nimtza de'esek yimei sfira sa'omer, she'im hechshor l'kabalas ha'torah, hi hazchakas b'midas ha'bitachon v'amunah. So very interesting. So it says, we don't necessarily think about sfira this way, that if kabalas ha'torah is about believing in Hashem to such a degree that now I'm ready to actually do mitzvos, every mitzvah is an expression of my bitachon. Putting on tefillin today is a manifestation of my belief that there's a God who told me to do something. And if I do it, when I would have, as a human being, maybe chosen something else to do, that's an expression of bitachon. When I figure out, again, how to position myself in terms of making a parnasa and a career, that's a manifestation of bitachon. So if Kabbalah Satorah is the ultimate receiving of the possibility of Amunah and Bitachon, so that means Sfira Sa'omer is a training ground for Amunah and Bitachon, which is so interesting. Let's hear what Avraham has to say, and then we'll talk this out. Yeah.
Can Bitachon exist without Amunah?
Can Bitachon exist without Amunah? I would think not. How could that be? How could I trust Hashem if I don't believe in Hashem?
I mean, can it be the same thing? Do they have to be separate?
It's not that they're separate. They work hand in hand. Right? They're very much one and the same. But one is more, like he's saying here, it's the abstract theory, and one is lamaisa. Emunah is, do I believe that there's a God out there? Bitachon is, do my actions reflect that belief? Right? Let's say I say, I know that Avi would never let me down. Avi's my good friend. Right? But let's say, you know, I never actually do anything to show that I really believe that Avi would never let me down. Right? So then you have to question, to what degree do I really have Emunah, to what degree do I... So if I say, I believe in Hashem, Hashem is God, Hashem is responsible for all, but none of my actions reflect that, so that's a pagam, not only my bitachon, but it's a pagam in my emunah. Right? But of course they go hand in hand. If I have real emunah, that's the point he's about to make. If my emunah is... the more real my emunah is, the more I'm able to have bitachon. If I really believe, not just as a soundbite, but if I actually believe that God is responsible for my financial success, so my behaviors will reflect that. If I'm too nervous to lean entirely on Hashem, so then I put in more hashtadlis. Right? Hashtadlis is sort of the human counterbalance to bitachon. Right? And yes, we're supposed to make hashtadlis, but to what degree? Okay, so these are the lines that we're trying to figure out. But emunah and bitachon have to go hand in hand. Of course they go hand in hand.
Bitachon is a higher level of emunah, so to speak?
Bitachon is megala one's emunah. Bitachon reveals the depth of my emunah. Because if I say, I love God, I believe in God, God is great, I have faith in God, and yet I'm too nervous to actually trust Hashem, and to trust that he knows what he's doing, and to trust the process, so then I guess my emunah is more lip service than anything else. Right? It hasn't yet become lamaisa. No? Yonah Eden, you have something to say on this topic? You had your hand up.
How high can, how much can one have become? What does it mean to have become?
If it's real, if it's real, if it's clear and it's real, you could be like a person who eats the man. And you cannot work and Hashem will provide for you. This is the machlokas between Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Yishmael in the Gemara and Brachos and Daf Lamed Hay. Do I have to work or should I let the world work for me? Rabbi Yishmael says, you got to plant, you got to plow, you got to work. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, if I spend all my time plowing, planting, and working, so then what am I actually going to learn? So Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai concludes, you do your part, which is Torah and Mitzvos, and Hashem will have the nations of the world provide for you. Right? The Gemara concludes, most people can't live like that. The Gemara is very realistic. The Gemara says, many people lived a Rabbi Yishmael Torah Umada lifestyle, and it worked. And many people tried to do like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, right? Where they said, I'm going to just rely on Hashem to provide, and it didn't work. Why didn't it work? Because they didn't really believe it. You have to be able to live that way, you have to really believe it. But if I really believe that Hashem would supply me with all of my needs, I could never work a day in my life, never worry about money. Right? And again, there's obviously many, many, many layers and levels to one's bitachon. In Ladavar Sof, in terms of levels. Right? Again, the Gemara says, Bishmal is sort of for the masses. But the Ari Yechidim, and again, Rishon Bar Yochai, we're saying, is that person of Bitachon, which is now helping us to understand why Shavuos, right, which is Kabbalah Satorah, and the underpinning of Torah is what? Ba'avur Avosenu Shabbatchu V'cha, because of the Bitachon of our Avos, we got the Torah. So now we're starting to understand, so now he's saying why Shavuos is having such a hashpa on Lag Ba'omer and Rishon Bar Yochai's day. Because really, that's what Torah is. Or is all about Amunah and Bitachon. Hashem begins at Har Sinai. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Amunah. Lo yalecha Elohim Acherim, don't rely on anyone else, Bitachon. Hashem begins his drasha with Amunah and Bitachon. That's where the whole thing starts. So it makes sense that the day of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who is the one who's fighting Rabbi Yishmael in that Gemara and saying, a Jew should never work, a Jew should just sit and learn. Live your whole life in the cave of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. It's a very high level. But if a person can live that way, right? Then he can be Ochle Hama, he can eat the man. And Hashem will drop off food at his doorstep, day in and day out. Wild idea. Very wild idea. Yeah, no.
Is there a clear cut answer as to what the balance between Mishtalas and Bitachon is? Because at what point should you be like, I'm probably due to Mishtalas, I should have more Bitachon.
In accordance with one's level, and the goal is that it should continue to grow. Right, again, that's what the Gemara's conclusion is. Many people did like Rabbi Yishmael and they were successful. Rabbi Yishmael says, you have to strike a balance between working and learning, between avodas Hashem and real world obligations and responsibilities. Right? The Gemara says, "Harbe asuk Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai." Many tried to do like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and they weren't matzliach. Right? So it's not the way of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is not for the masses, but for individuals who can get there. There are individuals who can get there. So they have to try to get there. They have to try to get there. What does it say? What do we say in Shema? We say in Shema, V'nesati metar artzachem b'yito yorah malkosh v'asafta diganecha v'siroshcha. So whose job is it to gather the grain and to gather the grapes and to gather the oil and the olives? Whose job is it to tend to our fields? Who's supposed to do that for us? Are we supposed to do that for ourselves? Or is someone supposed to do that for us? And the answer is, it depends. It depends. If we're the types of Jews that we're supposed to be, that's the pasuk, these are the pasukim that Rishon Bar Yochai quotes. You know, that'll determine whether or not we have to take care of ourselves, or Hashem will make the world take care of us. But there's no right answer. Each person has to figure out where that line is for himself. But a life of munah bitachon is a life of eating the man. It's a life of me'ein olam haba. It's a life of, you know, living in the anani hakavod. It's a life that's transcendent. Yeah.
I thought when Adam and Chava were still in Gehenna, and then, like, the first, like, their sin for, like, eating from the tree was because, like, they were destined to have to, like, work from the, whatever the wording was, like, from the sweat of their brow, like, they have to work for their sustenance, even though Hashem would be giving it, ultimately they would still be working for it.
The punishment of Adam and Chava getting kicked out of Gan Eden and being forced to work, right, is because they didn't listen to Hashem. They didn't trust the rules. They didn't play by the rules. We do have to work. That's part of our punishment. That's part of our punishment. But to the degree that a person has emunah and bitachon, they're back in Gan Eden. That's why emunah plus bitachon is gematria, Gan Eden. So you should try to work your way back to Gan Eden. Emunah is 102, bitachon is 75. Emunah bitachon is gematria, Gan Eden. So if we work on ourselves, we can get back to Gan Eden. We can get back there, yeah.
I think this might have been what Abu was asking.
Yes, and it will backfire. If your bitachon is not sincere, if you're just lazy, right? If you're just being a lazy person and putting the burden on Hashem, right? So that's irresponsible, and Hashem's not going to respond to you. But if you're choosing a life of less olam haza and trusting that Hashem will fill in the gaps for you because you really believe that Hashem can provide you with the man, as He did in preparation for the Kabbalah Satorah of of world history. So then you can make it real. But you know, don't try this unless it's real. Right? There's a lot of stories of people who, you know, try to live beyond their madrega and they failed. And that's the Gemara, I'm telling you, that's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, look it up, Brachos Daf Lamed Hey. Many people did like Rabbi Yishmael, lived a balanced life, and it worked. And people tried to live like Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, to try to go all in, but they weren't there in terms of their madrega, and it failed. Because if you're not real, if your bitachon's not real, if you're just being lazy and saying, this is great, I don't have to work a day in my life, right? So if you're not doing that because you really believe that Hashem runs the world, and I'm going to sit and learn Torah all day, and Hashem will find a way to make sure I don't starve to death, as He did in the Midbar, then gevaldik. But most people can't do that. And that goes back to what Menachem Ephraim is saying. The curse of Gan Eden is that we need to work. But again, we have to find that line. That's Noam's question. So how do you find the line between bitachon and eshtadlus? Where's the line? Right, how do I not become a slave to my work? So we got to figure out the balance. Eliyana, yeah, let's hear.
Some students are able to do it only because their bitachon was there, but others, they were in the Beis, but they knew that they felt they had to be worked because it's not going to fit, and they're right.
If you don't believe it, it's not going to work for you.
Based on our level of bitachon, we have to put our stuff
in. Nachon. Yeah.
Do we have any connection between like the man, like Haman, and like Haman?
For sure. Yes. And Haman, yeah, the short and quick answer, we have to just go back to Dalet and Reish here, right? Dalet and Reish and Hay and Kuf. They said that the month of Nisan is the letter Hay, and the month of Adar is the letter Kuf, right? Nisan is Hay, and Adar is Kuf. Right here.
is a kuf is a corrupted hay.
Kuf is a corrupted hay. So the month of Adar, the difference between kuf and hay is 95 is Gematria Haman. So Nisan is a time where we saw the Yad Hashem openly. We saw the hand of Hashem. There's no question. You saw miracles in Mitzrayim. How could you not believe in Hashem? The world of Haman, the world of Amalek, is the ultimate what? Ki Yad al Keska. That they block out Hashem's name. They block out Hashem's throne. They block out Hashem's presence in your life. And Haman being sort of the greatest of Amalek is the opposite of Haman. Right? The man was a food that what is the ultimate, you know, living with one's emun and bitachon. And Haman is the opposite. Haman's the Gemara says no one knew how to speak Lashon Hara like Haman. He said, Talmid Rabbi Akiva died because of speaking Lashon Hara during this period. So on the one hand, this was the period of eating the man. On the other hand, this is the period of, you know, avoiding Lashon Hara. Yes, there's a lot there. There's a lot there. Haman, there's definitely a lot going on there. More of a Purim shir than, but yes. But Haman is Amalek, and Amalek is anti-Emun and Bitachon. That's the simplest way to say it. Haman is the antithesis of everything we're learning about belief, and that's why on our way to Kabbalah Satorah, right? Hayesh Hashem Bikir Beinu Amayin, is God with us or not? Vayavo Amalek, and Amalek attacks. Amalek is anti Emun. Okay, Chaver, let's just go on a little bit. Let's go on to the piece a little bit, because I want to wrap up soon. So he says, Midas Bitachon is Be'etzem Koach HaEmunah. Right? And to the degree that, again, my Emunah becomes not theoretical in an abstract way, but becomes Lamasa, so that I'm able to actualize it. So therefore, Sfiras HaOmer, in preparation for Kabbalah Satorah, are days of Emunah and Bitachon. We still haven't explained why Lag BaOmer gets the greatest bounce back in terms of an energy off of Sfira, off of Shuas. But Koach HaEmunah, okay, third to last paragraph. What does Amunah do? Amunah comes to what? To subdue the machlokes of the heart against Hashem. The Ava, I want you to come to be able to love Hashem, as we say in Shema, with all of our heart, and all of our soul, and all of our resources. Right? And Chazal explained, what does it mean to love Hashem with all of your heart? Chazal say, Shalo yehe libcha chaluk al hamakom, that your heart should not be divided over the place. Hashem is called hamakom. There shouldn't be a part of you that's committed to Hashem and a part of you that doesn't believe in Hashem. Emunah, hopefully, gives a person the strength to say, I believe in Hashem wholeheartedly. Right? Use the expression, wholeheartedly. My whole heart is in it. And of course, that's rooted to be able to come to love Hashem with all my heart. It's rooted in the pasuk before that, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, v'hu pashut. And it's simple. It's obvious. The kishino sein imun male b'kadosh baruch hu. When a person gives full faith to Hashem, shehu menalo b'chol inyanov, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will protect him and guide him, and will direct him in all of his behaviors. And what happens when he gets a flat tire on the highway? What happens when he stubs his toe? Heard an amazing story this past Shabbos. A guy who just moved to my community. Amazing guy, beautiful family. So it was his father's yard site. So he sponsored Shalas Shudas this past Shabbos. And we started the minhag a little while ago that when someone sponsors Shalas Shudas, if they want to share something about whoever they're sponsoring a memory of, so we give them an opportunity to share some words. So he got up and he said, he was a big ball player in high school and in college also. Very good, very talented. And he was supposed to play in this, you know, this big tournament, with the prize being a trip to Israel, and he had a really good team, and they thought for sure that they could win, and he was really excited. Some of his buddies call him up and they say, We're playing like a pickup game. You want to come play? He's like, I can't play. I got to be careful. I can't injure myself before this tournament coming up. And they're like, nah, it's fine. Nothing's going to happen. It's fine. Anyway, so he goes to play with these guys. A couple minutes into the game, he comes down on his ankle. You know, hears it pop, and he knows, like, he's in bad shape. He's so angry. He's so upset. He's like, why did this happen to me? Like, I was looking forward to playing in this tournament. Happens to be, at the time, his father was not well, was scheduled for a big surgery that was coming up. And he ended up, he went to the hospital, and he was dating this girl at the time, so his girlfriend came with him to the hospital, and he said, this is what he said on Shabbos, he said, and the whole time we were sitting there, and I was so angry that this happened to me. And my girlfriend kept saying to me, you know, everything happens for a reason. And he's like, and I hated that. That was like the worst thing she could say. Like, I didn't want to hear that. Like, Hashem knows what he's doing, everything happens for a reason. He was so annoyed. What happened was that the next day he went to visit his father. Again, it was scheduled for like this big heart surgery in a week or so after that. And his ankle was all busted. He couldn't even drive the car. So his girlfriend offered to drive him. And they had been dating for a little while, but she had never met his father. So he says, you know what, you're here already. Do you want to come in and meet my dad? So she says, sure, you know, why not? So she comes in and she meets him. It's very nice. And then she, you know, she leaves after a little bit, goes back to the car so we can have a couple more minutes with his father. He said, the next day, he gets a phone call. Your father had a massive heart attack and he passed away. Totally shocked. And he said, and he ended up marrying this girlfriend. And he says, can you imagine? If I wouldn't have gotten injured, then my wife never would have had the opportunity to meet my father. And he said, so you'll tell me this is a story about my wife. He's telling me about this story about the greatness of my wife. Right? Because she was the one who had the perspective, it's all from Hashem, and she was so right. In the end, she was so right. He said, no, but he said, really, it's a story about my father. He said, because my father was the type of guy who was always there for the important moments in our life. And he said, it couldn't be, if Hashem had a terrible, you know, gezeirah that my father was not going to survive, it couldn't be that my father wouldn't meet my wife. He said, that's why Hashem orchestrated this whole thing. Oh, that's such an amazing perspective. So says Rav Weintraub, a person who really says Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and I've said many times, we cover our eyes because we say we don't care what our eyes are telling us. My eyes might tell me my situation is terrible. If it's nira be'einav, kehezik v'hefsid, he somech al HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he relies on Hashem, because he believes. He doesn't believe in Hashem when things are good and ditches Hashem when it's hard. Shekol, he believes, kol ma da'avid rachmano letav avid, in the words of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai's Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva, everything Hashem does is for the best. And that reconciles all of the division of the heart. That reconciles all of the questions that we sometimes have. We still haven't explained what does this have to do with Lag BaOmer. So finally, in the last two paragraphs, Hagdaras Knias Machlokas Hu Hoda. When a person gives in, you're having a debate. You're having a machlokas, you're fighting with someone. And finally you decide to say, you know what, you're right. Right? Again, it doesn't have to be a vicious debate. It could be two guys arguing over what's the pshat in the line of the Gemara. Here's how I read it. Finally, one of them says, you know what, I admit I was wrong and you've got the right pshat. So subduing the machlokas is called hoda. Hoda means hoda, admission. Right? The word modim, moda and to be moda, right? To admit to something, they're very much connected. Because when I say thank you to someone, I'm admitting I could not have done it without you. Right? To be moda b'miksas, the Gemara talks about. A person has a claim against them and he's moda b'miksas. He partially admits to what's being claimed against him. Right? So subduing a machlokas comes from what? Comes from admitting. The hoda miklal depligi. Hoda means, when I admit, it means that originally, the implication is that originally we had a machlokas, but now I'm moda, now I confess and I admit that you were right. Ubeprat misuya moda labal plukta shalom. And in a certain point, in a certain prat, in a certain detail, I'm moda, I confess, I admit, I surrender to the bal plukta, to the one who I was arguing with. Umitam ze hanhagas hahod. Hamusker by Vayavarech David, Pirshu Chazal beBrachos Daf Nunches Dehu Binyan Beis Hamikdash, Shu Makom Hamakudash Mikol HaOlam LeInyan Avoda VaHachna VaZbatlus Al Hashem Yizbarach. And therefore, when we say in Pesukei DeZimra Lacha Hashem HaGedula VaGevura VaTeferas VaNetzach VaHahod, The Gemara in Brachos says Hod refers to Beis HaMikdash. Hod refers to Beis HaMikdash. Why? Because Hod is a Lashon of Hodah. Of what? Of surrender. Of admitting. However, this week in Sfiras HaOmer is the week of Netzach. We just finished the week of Tiferes. We're starting the week of Netzach. Netzach is the Midah of Moshe Rabbeinu. Netzach is the Midah of being victorious. Being a fighter. Hod is humility. Hod is submission. Hod is surrender. Hod is being a makabel, is being someone who's on the receiving end. The Beis HaMikdash, when a Jew comes to Beis HaMikdash, he feels what? Totally batel to the presence of Hashem in that place. When you walked into Beis HaMikdash, you just felt, you were swallowed up. You could be a big shot outside the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah, I made partner in my law firm. I'm a big shot now, right? Drive a nice car, got a fancy watch. You walk into Beis HaMikdash, and in the best of ways, you shrivel up in the presence of Hashem. That's what Hod is, right? Hod is surrender. Hod is submission. Hod is, I admit that I was wrong and you were right. There was a machlokas here, but now we're not fighting anymore. So now, here's the punchline. V'hine yom lag v'omer hu hanhagas hod shebehod. In the Sfira, the 33rd day of the Omer is Hod Shebehod. It's the ultimate expression of Hod. Hod Shebehod. Klomar, Duhu Nekudas HaHod Kemoshehu. Hod Shebehod means Hod as it's supposed to be. Hod Shebehod. The ultimate Hod. Now it's interesting, just pause for a second. If the Gemara tells us that Hod is based on Mikdash, so what's Hod Shebehod? Kodesh Kadashim. Kodesh Kadashim. Right, if the Beis HaMikdash generally is Hod, then Hod Shebehod is definitely what? It's Kodesh Kadashim. Bar Yochai B'Kodesh HaKadashim. Yeah, Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon is the world of Kodesh Kadashim. It's the world of Hod Shebehod. It's the world of what? It's the, what do you think it was like to come to Beis HaMikdash? Unbelievable. You feel the Hashras, Hashchina. What do you think it's like to walk into Kodesh Kadosh on Yom Kippur as Kohen Gadol? Imagine? Can you imagine what that must have felt like? To be swallowed up by that presence of Hashem? Do you think a Kohen Gadol would come into Kodesh Kadosh on Yom Kippurim on behalf of Klal Yisrael, the holiest place on the holiest day, the holiest person? Do you think he has any tainas on Hashem? Do you think he has any emunah and bitachon issues? It's crystal clear. So therefore, Hod Shebehod is Hod the way it's supposed to be. Belita Arobes Hanhaga Acheres. Without anything else mixed in, like Chesed Shebehod or Netzach Shebehod or any other Hod, something Shebehod. This is pure Hod. Valpia Omor, so based on what we've said. Shu Yom HaMesugo B'Yosar L'Chizuk Amunan Bitachon. If this is the day of Amunan Bitachon, Shal Yedeza Magiyam Lahoda Gemura. If Shavuos, if getting the Torah means I believe in God and I'm prepared to live a life based on that, so the day of Hod Shebehod is going to draw most significantly from Shavuos. You understand? All the days, right? Again, all 17 days leading up to Shavuos, really all 49 days leading up to Shavuos, but especially in the back end, the 17 days are drawing from Shavuos, even though Shavuos comes afterwards. But it's the same way that on the same way that in Chol HaMoed draws from the Yom Tov before and the Yom Tov after. So the Sfiras HaOmer is drawing from Shavuos. But which day draws the most from Shavuos? If Shavuos is the day where we stand at our Sinai, we're standing face to face with Hashem and hearing God speak, right? So the day of Hod Shebehod, of total bittul to Hashem, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who lived in the presence of Hashem like no other, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, his day is going to be a day of what? Of Amun and Bitachon. It's going to be a day of Hodash, Al Yedeiz Magim Lahoda Gemura, where I'm no longer divided in my heart about Hashem. That's a Rishon Bar Yochai's Shita in Brachos Daf Lamed Hey. Why should you work? Why should you get a job? Just trust in Hashem. Right? It's an absolute, unadulterated, diluted commitment of Amun and Bitachon to Hashem. And that's why he lived in his little personal Gan Eden. He lived in that cave. And he ate a carob tree and he drank from a mystical spring of water. And he was back in Gan Eden. He was literally back in Gan Eden. Because Amun HaBitachon is Gematria Gan Eden. He was back in Gan Eden. Shavoyei Libcha Chalak Alamakum Klal. He couldn't understand a balanced approach, a little bit of learning, a little bit of working. It didn't mean anything to him. So now we come to the bottom paragraph. So according to this, we understand now, we understand clearly, so if Shavuos is bouncing back an energy into Sfiras HaOmer, since after all, like we explained, since that's the goal of these days, so certainly Chal al Yom Lag BaOmer B'miyucha Lag BaOmer in particular is going to receive from that light. Dehu Nakuda Hamatima B'Yoser L'Segulas Chag HaShavuos, because the Midah of Lag BaOmer Hod Shebahod is the ultimate kli to receive the light of Hashem. The way to receive the light of Hashem is again by saying, I'm prepared to live the Torah. I hear your voice in the world, Hashem. I make decisions that are sometimes unpopular, but it's what you want. I don't care if people are looking at me. You believe in that stuff? Yes, I believe in that stuff. You actually do? Yes, I actually do. You're prepared to lose money over it? Yes, I'm prepared to lose money over it. I'm prepared to make sacrifices for it. Shemevi lahoda. Vafkas hamachlokes, whatever machlokes, the sitra achra, the yitzahara, the amalik of one's heart, causes between you and Hashem, on the day of Rishon BaYochai, everything is resolved. Uviyom shemahusa hu hod shebahod, chol alav sugyas chag HaShavuos, v'zeh yichudo shayom hazeh. And that's what's happening. That's what's happening on this day. That's what's happening on this day. I'll just end with one last thing. I know it's super late. Let me just end with one last thing just to really hammer this home. Because the way that Rav Elie Weintraub explained it, he explained such a beautiful way of understanding, again, how Kabbalah Sa Torah is about Amun and Bitachon, right? And how that bounces back into Lag BaOmer, which is Hod Shebahod, making yourself that kli to not question Hashem, but to believe wholeheartedly in Hashem. But the truth is, you have to understand one last thing about Lag BaOmer. And it's a deep idea. It would take a long time to explain. I'll just say it very, very quickly. It says, Pasuk says, Bitchu b'Hashem ade'ad. What does that mean, Bitchu b'Hashem ade'ad? Trust in Hashem, Bitchu. Trust in Hashem ade'ad. What do you think ade'ad means? How do you translate it? Bitchu b'Hashem ade'ad. Trust in Hashem all the way. Ade'ad. Right? Ad hasof. Ade'ad. Ad. Until what? Ade'ad. Forever and ever. Trust Hashem all the way. That's what we're describing here. Hod Shebahod. Complete trust in Hashem. There's an idea in the writings of the Arizal that the name of Hashem that corresponds to Lag BaOmer is a name of Hashem that comes from the letters before the name Elohim. What does that mean, the letters? So we know that Hashem has a lot of names. Hashem has the name Yud Kei Vav Kei, Hashem has the name Elohim, Hashem has a lot of different names. Yud Kei Vav Kei is Hashem's name of Chesed and Rachamim. Elohim is Hashem's name of Midas Hadin. Right? But if you could take the letters before the name Elohim, in other words, before the Din, right? It's sort of like the Gemara says, Hikdim Refua Lamaka. The medicine before the illness. Hashem prepares the medicine before the illness. So the letters before Elohim are actually letters that sweeten the name Elohim. So the Arizal says the name of Hashem for Lag BaOmer is the name that comes from the letters before Elohim. Okay? Let me just explain what this means for 2 seconds. I know it's very confusing and very deep. So what are the letters before Aleph, Lamed, Hey, Yod, and Mem? So the letter before Aleph, well, there is no letter before Aleph. So Aleph remains an Aleph. The letter before Lamed is a Chaf. The letter before Hey is a Dalet. The letter before Yud is a Tes. And the letter before Mem Sofit is actually a regular Mem. So it's interesting. The last two letters of Elohim, the Aleph and the Mem, actually stay the same. The three middle letters become Chaf, Dalid, and Tes. What's the Gematria of Chaf, Dalid, and Tes? 33. Right? 33. What's the gematria of the whole name? Let's do the whole name now. Let's add an aleph and a mem.
The last is a mem.
The last is a mem. It becomes a regular mem. Right? Because if it goes from mem sofit, it goes back to regular mem. And the whole question as to why the two outer letters don't change. Not for now. Right? But you take the whole name, what is it? 74. Right? The middle three are 73. Then another 41. Right? 74. Is gematria ad. Right? This shem, aleph, and chaf, and dalet, and tes, and mem, is called the shem bitachon. It's known as the shem bitachon. That's the Arizal says. But now we understand why Lag BaOmer is a day of bitachon. Because again, Kabbalah Satorah is the ultimate day of bitachon. And Lag BaOmer is the day, more than any other day, that we receive a ripple effect, a bouncing back of the light of Shuas. Right? And it's a day where we have a certain clarity. It's Hod Shebahod. It's a day where we surrender to Hashem and say, Hashem, you're right. We have no sveikos, we have no questions, we have no doubts, there's no amalek. There's only Oz V'chedva Bimkomo. There's nothing other than celebrating HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what Rishon Baruch Chai taught to the world. That's Rabbi Akiva on his deathbed, having his flesh ripped off. And his Talmidim saying, Rabbeinu, Ad Kan. What do they mean by Ad Kan? Ad, we said, is the gematria of the name of Bitachon. Rabbi Akiva, you still believe in God? After everything you did for God, this is how you die? And Rabbi Akiva says, I've waited my whole life for this. I have no questions. Rabbi Akiva, Rishon BaYochai, these are Jews who transcended all of the questions that we might have to have absolute bitachon on Hashem. And that's what David HaMelech is saying. Bitchu b'Hashem adei ad. Put your trust in Hashem all the way. Adei ad. All the way. The shame of Lag BaOmer. The whole name is gematria ad. The middle three letters that are transformed, that are changed, that are sweetened. That's how the Svarim HaKadosh referred to it. The sweetening of the Midas HaDin, right, is Gematria 33. Okay, so Cheva, if we want to get ourselves ready for Shavuos, and really if we want to live a life that's wholesome and meaningful all the way, so we have to have this Midah of Hod Shebahod, to have the humility to admit, Hashem, you're right. And while it sometimes seems like I have all sorts of questions and I'm not sure why you run the world the way that you do, we have to surrender ourselves to Hashem. That's the experience of coming to Beis HaMikdash, which is Hod. That's even more so the experience of coming to Kodesh Kadashim, which is Hod Shavuot. Okay, so we should be Zocha. We should be Zocha to be Jews. We're able to, again, to prepare ourselves during these days and understand what Shavuos is offering us and what Lag BaOmer, Birtz Hashem, in just a couple of days from now, is offering us. Yes?
Just a small comment.